Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome everyone to another week of the Damage Report. I am John Iderola. This is our big pre-election show, and I'll go through my whole big preview of the show. I don't want to wait though. Do you know who is in studio? My co-host for the entirety of this episode, Alyssa Milano.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
However happy you think you are, I am far happier. No. We've wanted to have you on for a long time.
Oh, thank you.
You've been understandably kind of busy.
I've been busy. It's been a busy couple of years. And can you believe that tomorrow is the day? The day we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, perhaps dreading, perhaps hoping.
How do you feel? Combination of two.
Well, I told you when you came in, I'm not a nervous person.
Right.
But I'm nervous.
Yeah, I'm nervous too. I have butterflies in my tummy.
Yeah. Well, partially, one of the reasons I'm nervous is that I don't think of myself as a naive person anymore, but on the eve of the 2016 election, I still thought, we got this.
Yeah, of course.
And so now I question myself 100%.
We all did, didn't we?
A lot of people afterward were saying, no, I totally knew. Totally knew that Trump was gonna win.
Right. Right.
So yeah. I'm afraid of false confidence now.
I'm not reading any polls at all whatsoever.
See, I'm reading tons of them.
Are you?
They'll drive you crazy.
Well, I mean, I was talking to some sort of expert the other day from the DNC actually, and she had told me that Florida early voting was favoring Republicans. And I was like, nope, can't do it. Can't do it. Can't la la la.
What if I could reassure you?
Okay.
It is favoring Republicans. The most recent numbers I saw, over 3 million early votes, and the Republicans are up, I believe, by 0.6%. But in 2016 or 2014, I forget which, they were up by 4%.
So which pollsters do you like?
Do you like in general?
Nate Silver?
Yeah, I go for more of the aggregations. Yeah. I don't necessarily trust any individual polls. And I don't necessarily have the time on a day-to-day basis to go through the ratings and things like that. Not to trust Rasmussen, I know that.
Right. How about the fact that Beto O'Rourke has no polling in his campaign whatsoever.
Or basically none.
Right.
They should be there. Every 3 days we should have a new poll. And they're like,
you love the polls.
I want to see them. I want to know.
But what did that give us in 2016?
I think in 2016 the polls are actually pretty accurate.
You do?
The issue is, so understand where I come from. I'm a politics nerd. Before I came and started hosting these shows, I was a political science graduate student. Mm-hmm. And I studied, you know, poll making and things like that. So in 2016, the overall national poll had Hillary up by like 2 or 3%, and she ended up winning by like 2 or 3%.
Right.
In the individual states that ended up throwing the Electoral College, like in, I believe, Pennsylvania, I think she was up by like 2 points. And the thing is, if a margin of error is 3 or 4 points, that 2-point lead easily goes to him winning by 70,000 votes and the whole thing flips.
I also heard a very interesting thing, which was if we're taking into account new voters, new registered voters, you have to add +4 to +8 onto the Democratic candidates. Which would be amazing.
I'm hoping. So I was gonna save this, but I saw one number that was just amazing. So we're gonna talk later on about Stacey Abrams and some of the other gubernatorial races. The early vote in 2014 was 945,000 votes, so less than 1 million. In this cycle, it's already over 2 million, so more than doubling. And you're seeing that play out in a number of different states. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to advantage the Democrats, but it feels like it should.
It feels like it should, especially when you take the new registered voters into account, right? Why all of a sudden are they motivated to vote? Is it because they're just of age now and are motivated by this newer generation of activism, or are they fired up?
Yeah. Yeah, like I can imagine why Andrew Gillum or Stacey Abrams or Beto O'Rourke would be generating new voters. It's hard to imagine a lot of people who didn't care about Trump in 2016 and have since come to love him. That seems harder to imagine, I think.
Yes, or harder to imagine that the fear tactics that they're building their you know, final play on is actually working for that many people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and they've been relentless with that message. So just a warning, at any time our studio could be invaded by the caravan, which is streaming up through Mexico. So we're gonna broadcast as long as we can, okay? Anyway.
I did a podcast with Barbara Boxer the other day, and she said, yeah, my grandparents came over in a caravan. It was a ship caravan. And I was like, that's a perfect way to describe
Yeah,
you know,
at one point,
happening.
My family, you know, they boarded a boat in Italy.
Yep, and it was a caravan.
And you know what? People were pretty scared of them at that point, too. But we got past it as a nation.
They were scared they were going to gain weight from all the carbs that the Italians were going to bring over.
Mob and stuff. Yeah, the Italians had some bad periods in history in America. But I want to talk to you, so really fast preview, so much that we want to talk about, we're not going to be able to get through all of it, unfortunately, but we're going to be covering basically the stakes in this election, some of the most high profile ballot measures. We're going to go over some of the most exciting and in fact tightest gubernatorial races. We've got a number of Senate and House candidates that we want to touch on. And then in the end, we are going to talk about what's at stake, why we think this election in particular matters. But I am curious, you've been relentlessly active for the past couple of years and managed to make a show in the middle of it. I don't know how you actually did that. That seems absurd.
And raise babies.
You actually maintained a life at the same time. What is it about this cycle, you know, in the past couple of years, especially around Kavanaugh and a number of family separation that made you want to effectively like turn your life over to this?
Well, I think, you know, I've been politically active since 2000. And mm-hmm. in 2000, we sort of faced not similar, but also an outrageous outcome, which was when Gore lost the election. And that sort of ignited in me a sense of political responsibility that I felt that I had mm-hmm. to sort of uphold having a platform that I had. It never occurred to me that being a celebrity meant that I couldn't have a political ideology. It actually meant to me that I had to have more of a political ideology mm-hmm. because I take my platform very, very seriously in it. And so I've been, you know, for 20 years driving people to the polls and doing
really?
This. Yes, this same work, you know, campaigning for candidates. But obviously, since 2016, what were my options? My options were either to stay in the fetal position for 2 years under the covers with the lights off, or to actually get out there and feel like I'm actively making a difference.
Yeah.
So I chose to sort of get out there. And it's not anything unlike I've normally done, it just feels a lot more intensive because the stakes are so much higher.
Yeah, we're gonna go over for just 1 minute because I do have a follow-up question. So I have noticed, maybe this isn't a new thing, maybe I'm just noticing it more, maybe because of social media, but it does feel like more celebrities are willing to engage on a daily basis with politics.
You think so?
I mean, I see Don Cheadle is like, he's arguing with people all day long.
Yeah,
and, you know,
God bless Don Cheadle.
He's like out
he's
there
amazing.
Fighting.
Yes.
So, and I've seen a lot of people like that. And I often wonder, is there any fear that these two parts of your life, the entertainment part and the political part, that one could be potentially hurting the other?
I think often when you see celebrities not using their voice, it is because of that fear.
Yeah.
It's a fear that they're going to alienate half of the audience. Yeah. And especially in such a polarized time as right mm-hmm. now, when Trump supporters really are upset with me. And there is that fear of okay, maybe those people are not gonna download Insatiable, you know? Mm-hmm. There is that fear. But to me, I have to be able to sleep with myself at night and look at myself in the mirror and know that all the hard work in my acting career actually leads to something fulfilling, which to me is to be able to help people and to live a life of service.
Yeah, totally understandable fears. There's one or two of my favorite.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Celebrities, and I'm just hoping like someday there's gonna be a breaking point where they're gonna come out and say something political, but so far I'm still waiting. We are gonna take our first break though. When we come back, ballot measures, a number of huge areas. We've got anti-abortion ballot measures, a carbon tax, a whole bunch of stuff. We're gonna be breaking those down across the country after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report. This is election week in advance of tomorrow's election. I am here, that sort of goes without saying. Alyssa Milano, great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to break down some of these ballot measures. So obviously, you know, you got great candidates you can vote for, but if you'd like to take democracy by the hand, you know, like take it under direct control, this is a great way to do it. We've got a number of opportunities where ballot measures could lead to positive change, but there is this area of new anti-abortion restrictions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of progressive ballots that are, or measures that are on the ballots, but also there are a lot of regressive measures that are on the ballots. And one area in particular that I'd like to talk about is anti-abortion. There are three different states that have anti-abortion measures on their ballots, which to me is horrifying, especially thinking about the fact that Kavanaugh now sits on the Supreme Court. So, In Oregon, Measure 106 would immediately ban Medicaid insurance coverage for abortion. So basically, it's a backdoor ban, and only people that can afford abortions will be able to get abortions.
It's specifically targeting like the women who least have the ability to pay for it themselves, cutting them
off. The low-income, marginalized, you know, communities of color, basically. Yeah. In West Virginia, Amendment 1, no constitutional right to an abortion would immediately ban Medicaid insurance coverage for abortion. And then Alabama, which is Amendment 2, which is a fetal rights proposition, which would basically criminalize abortion, punishable by jail time.
Yeah.
So we need to really pay attention to these ballot measures and make the right decision, especially when our physical autonomy and our ability to choose is at stake. It's really heartbreaking to me that, you know, 44 years after we fought for our right to autonomy, we are seeing this being systematically rolled back. And I think part of this rollback of women's rights is the reason why we're seeing Me Too and Time's Up sort of take off the way it is. I think women are really scared. But beyond that, I think there's a lot of really progressive initiatives.
Well, I did want to ask you about that. And thank you for pointing out that that's one of the things driving this. I mean, the gender divide in terms of female support for the two parties is bigger than it's been as far as I've ever seen. Some of these things, especially the fetal rights, seems like it's obviously unconstitutional. Like, you know, Roe v. Wade would not allow for this. But something is only unconstitutional if the Supreme Court doesn't change their mind. And now, I mean, look, you tried about as hard as anyone to stop Kavanaugh from getting on the court, but he's there. Now, the Republicans said, we're not choosing him because he's going to strike down Roe v. Wade. But how worried are you that if some of these are appealed up to the Supreme Court, that he could do that?
This is a very important conversation because often we do not think of our decisions on election day to actually have impact on the courts. Mm-hmm. And what we're actually seeing is the Republicans basically taking over the courts. They've put 70 judges on all level of courts. And what that means is when we're, you know, if there's something that we are unsure of, like a Muslim ban, I mean, not that we're unsure of it, but, you know, we're not sure of the constitutional, you know, right of that. We look at the courts basically for corrective measures, right, to correct these policies. And because the courts are being taken over now, we don't have that protection anymore. So I really would just implore everybody to look, research whatever judges are going to be on your ballot and vote, you know, for it. And that's usually a bipartisan area. So it's not going to have a D next and an R next to it. You actually have to do your research and really please just, you know, vote for judges that are going to keep the things we fought for in place.
Yeah. And yes, so when you're directly getting the option, and there's probably, regardless of what state you're in, there's probably a lot of different judges you're going to be voting on. But also understand that when you vote for president and when you vote for your senator, you are determining what the future path of the Supreme Court is going to be.
That's right.
Like if, you know, if you know, 80,000 votes had changed in the 2016 election, we would now have a durable liberal majority on the Supreme Court. Instead, we went the other way. And that's not just important under Donald Trump for whether his Muslim ban will go through. But let's say we throw out Donald Trump and we get a good progressive president. They now are going to face a Supreme Court that is going to probably attempt to limit or overthrow a lot of the big legislation they will pass.
Right.
That's disheartening.
It's truly about we need the balance. I mean, it's not good for it to be one-sided in either direction. We need the balance. We need the checks and balances.
Although if it is going to be one-sided, like our side.
I mean, yeah, of course.
Go over here.
But I do understand the importance of being able to look at something from a legal, constitutional, you know, manner. And we often look at our courts for corrective actions.
And you pointed out the Muslim ban, like that thankfully was limited, especially early on by
in
the courts.
Exactly.
Now imagine if those courts had gone the other way. So other than the abortion, there's sets of other sorts of ballot measures. Now, I know we've talked about redistricting, like there's big gerrymandering issues around the country. So multiple states attempting to do something about this.
So yeah, Michigan's actually got an interesting sort of take on this. It's Proposition 1. Oh no, Proposition 1 is actually legalizing weed, which I think we're all for. Proposition 2 actually is independent redistricting that would take the drawing of Michigan's districting out of the hands of legislature and move it to an independent bipartisan commission. So what that means is there would be a 13 citizen commission, four Republicans, four Democrats, and five people who would identify with neither party, and they would actually draw the districting maps, which I think is really, really interesting. Utah also has an independent redistricting commission on the ballot, and it's called Better Boundaries. So I think those are really, really cool to do your research on. And then there's a bunch of voting initiatives going on throughout the country. Nevada has initiative petition 1, which is automatic voter registration. How is that not a thing already? How is that not a thing already? So I'm super excited about that. Florida Amendment 4, which is a really big deal, voting restoration amendment. They would basically restore voting rights and fix Florida's broken restoration system. With 1.4 million people who have paid their debt to society would be then eligible to vote.
That's a huge one.
That is a big one.
I mean, especially for 2020. Like there are people,
huge.
I saw one profile of a guy who he had a drug possession charge in 1997.
Yeah.
And he still can't vote.
Yeah, that's
absurd.
Yeah, and 1.4 million people that don't have the ability to vote would be able to vote, and I think that's huge.
So on that, I do want to say one of my biggest frustrations with the period where we had Barack Obama and we had Democratic control of both the House and the Senate is that they did not do more to get out in front of the voter suppression, like doing national voter registration, automatic voter registration. If we can have the selective service, we can have that for voting as well. Not having a national holiday for voting. Why is there not a Democracy Day? We have a million national holidays. We can't have one
Saturday, or at least make it a Saturday.
Whatever, and make sure that people that are working one or more jobs actually are able to go out and vote. Like
because that's just it. People don't realize that people that are working hourly jobs cannot take off 4 hours to go vote, right? Yeah. Because those 4 hours mean food on the table.
Or possibly losing your job.
Or possibly losing their job, exactly.
I can't believe that they didn't do it. And I know that for whatever reason, there would be a battle. Like the Republicans would actually find some argument for why we shouldn't do it. But that is a battle that I want to have. I want the country to be focused on one party standing for your ability to actually have a functioning democracy and the other to be making the case in the opposite direction. I think that that would be an amazing argument to have publicly.
I totally agree with
you. And hopefully in the near future, we'll have that.
I would really like that very much.
Yes.
Do we have time to talk about more?
I think, how long do we have in this block? 30 seconds?
Okay.
Okay, why don't we take a short break? We'll come back. We'll do more on the ballot initiatives.
Great.
There's so many topics we want to cover, and we'll do that after this. Welcome back. Okay, lots more ballot measures to get to. I know that there were a few. You've actually found some that I had not been aware of, so I'm going to learn something here.
Okay. So in Washington, Initiative 940 is a violence de-escalation act. So what it would do, it would require law enforcement to receive violence de-escalation training, mental health, and first aid training, and provide first aid and change the standards for use of deadly force. And I think if this passes, it's really going to set precedent for the rest of the country.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
This is an area where our country has to catch up to the way basically every other country does this. Like, we train our police that are you not scared? You should be scared. You should be terrified when you go out there. And if anybody makes you feel even a little bit more scared, you got to start shooting at them.
God forbid you're a person of color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that seems great.
So that seems great. I mean, it also seems a little odd that those policies need to be on a ballot and aren't just implemented within the police force. But
and also,
yet here we are.
Yeah. So great on Washington for having this. Hopefully they'll actually pass it. And it's not like Washington doesn't have issues, obviously. But I would love to see that sort of thing in like Florida, Missouri, maybe. Yeah. That would be nice. Yeah. Texas. Unfortunately, the lib areas have to lead the way, even if they're not the ones that necessarily have it the worst.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So California has an interesting measure on the ballot, which is rent control. Since 1995, municipalities in California have been barred from regulating rent in new developments. So Proposition 10, championed by tenants' rights groups, would reverse this policy and allow local governments to regulate rent. So obviously, huge boon for affordable housing, really. And we really need this, I think, in California. Obviously, we have a huge discrepancy as far as the difference between incomes, right? Yeah. We have very high incomes and very low incomes, and we have a very, very severe, serious homeless issue. So I think that this would really help.
Yeah, and if people don't know, like if you don't live in this area, it is bad.
Yeah.
Like rent is bad, the home prices are just absurd.
Absurd.
I remember just a couple of years ago, over the course of the last couple of years in Playa Vista, they turned basically a massive swamp into all these new apartments. And I thought, oh, good, more housing. And now you drive through and you're like, oh, $3 million.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that doesn't really help me at all.
Right, exactly. So I don't know how a family of four is supposed to survive in this state. So I'm hopeful that will pass and it will make a difference.
Although let's point out, as we talked about in the break, this is one of those areas where the people in opposition to it have raised an ungodly sum of money.
Yeah.
To run against
There's a lot of no on the rent control proposition. And I think the thing that we should point out to your viewers is that sometimes these measures are worded in a way where you go, what are they I don't know whether to vote yes or no on this. And that's why it's so vital that we all do our research in these ballot measures. And there, to me, the best thing for me to do is to look at different organizations, different groups that have backed or are against different propositions. Yeah. You know, and when I see the Democratic Party has backed something, I say, okay, yes. When I see that the ACLU has backed something, I say, okay, yes. And I think that that's really important. See, to find out which organizations are endorsing what propositions. And that is very telling on which way you should vote on things.
Exactly. Especially when, I mean, there are cases. So I would go, one area that I went to was Ballotpedia. So Ballotpedia does, it shows the endorsements, both organizations and also individuals. Mm-hmm. So you can find out. And in some cases, by the way, there'll be some Democrats are for it, some Democrats are against it. You can look at that. It lists the overall fundraising in which groups have contributed. Yeah. That can be really interesting when one side has $0 and the other has $35 million. But what I also liked about Ballotpedia was they have individual sort of supportive statements and opposition statements from some of the groups and individuals. They also do, at least in California, and I think probably other areas too, the editorial boards of the major newspapers, they will summarize their positions on each of them. And any one of these things isn't necessarily enough to know which way you should support. But when you go through all of it, it gives you a way better idea than a simple reading of the ballot measure can give you.
Right. And I do think that some ballot measures are made to confuse you. Mm-hmm. The wording is specifically there to confuse you.
Yeah. And
then one other one that I would like to talk about is in Washington State, voters will decide the fate of Initiative 1639, which would be the state's most comprehensive gun reform law. Mm-hmm. And it would include secure gun storage requirements, enhanced background checks, and waiting periods for firearms, which you know, at some point, I hope we get on a federal level. Yeah. But I think it's great that these states are taking the matters into their own hands and really trying to change the gun violence culture that we're in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Both the gun violence as a result of, you know, people getting access to guns they shouldn't have, but then also the legal gun ownership under areas that shouldn't be legal, like in that incel in Tallahassee, he legally owned his gun, but should he have, considering his history of arrests for assaulting women, his misogynistic and racist postings online? This was a guy that was telegraphing to the country, I hate these people, I want to do violence against them. He was able to buy a gun, and then he used it to kill people.
And then he went and taught a yoga class, right?
Yeah, or attacked the yoga class.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Attacked the yoga class.
I just want to briefly mention, so you talked about 1639 in Washington, but Washington also has 1631. Will establish a carbon tax in Washington, mm-hmm. which charges oil companies and other polluters for emitting carbon in the atmosphere. That is something that I think we desperately need on the national level, but I don't think we're going to get it until we have state level experiments. California, hopefully more states will establish that sort of thing as well. We could use that. Similarly, by the way, Tom Steyer, liberal billionaire.
Nevada and Arizona. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he has ballot measures that would require by, I believe, 2030, I think it is, they would generate 50% of their power from renewable sources. That is a goal that is eminently doable. We can do that. We have
especially
to do
that. Especially in Arizona and Nevada,
exactly.
Where the sun doesn't stop shining.
Did you know they don't have night? They actually don't have night. Why aren't they using the sun? It's so stupid and self-defeating. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of that UN report from a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to have a serious conversation about climate change or change around the edges. We need the boldest, we need an Apollo project 10 times over in 10 different industries.
And this is, we really need both sides to come together on this. Mm-hmm. We don't have time. We don't have time to play partisan politics on this.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a political issue. Let's just get it done. Let's fix the problem. That's it.
Yeah, we don't need the compromise position on the fate of our species.
No.
That's, if you can't compromise on one thing.
Or
the earth, human civilization, anything. That is certainly true. You briefly mentioned too, as has been the case in a lot of the recent cycles, there are multiple states that are theoretically legalizing marijuana as well.
Yes.
That is becoming more and more common. Thank God for that. The acceleration on the change in public opinion over the past decade has been great. I mean, California now has it legal. We're doing okay. It doesn't seem like it's destroyed our state.
I mean, I might have a couple of plants at my house.
Yeah. And you have that legal right to do that.
Thank you.
And soon, hopefully, in Michigan and Florida. So Florida is doing, they have a state constitutional provision that a ballot measure is trying to overturn. And what that constitutional provision does is it says that even if we decriminalize it, all of you people who are already facing charges don't get any crazy ideas that we're going to drop the charges. And so hopefully people will be able to change that.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the big thing, is how many people are in prison right now. When you talk about prison reform, if we just started there.
Exactly.
And bailed out those people.
And when you combine this with the felony re-registration provision, Florida's a great test case for, are we going to continue to accept utter demonization of anyone who has ever violated a law?
Right.
These are still people. These are still Americans. They still have basic human decency, dignity, and rights. And I am glad that
Served their time.
Yeah, they've already served their, that's an important point.
They've served their time.
Yes.
They've served their time.
But there's a lot of people that want you to believe that whether they serve their time or not, no, they're not real Americans anymore. We can't trust them with the vote. You know, if Duncan Hunter can run for Congress while being indicted.
Thank you.
Who committed drug crimes in the 90s should be able to vote, I think.
Amen.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna end this segment just a little bit early. We're gonna come back though. Amazing candidates for governor's races around the country. We're gonna be covering several of those. We'll eventually get into the Senate and the House as well after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report. We turn now to the governor's races. We are blessed, thankfully, this cycle with a number of exciting candidates for gubernatorial races. And there's a few that I know we want to focus on. We agreed on the first, though, Stacey Abrams.
Stacey Abrams is a star. She is filled with not only charisma, but knowledge, warmth. Mm-hmm. She is everything you could possibly want for a candidate, especially for Georgia. She is the right candidate for that state. And I have to tell you, that state needs a lot of help in the election world. We were focused very much on Kemp's sort of, you know, everything that he has done throughout this election cycle to whether it be purging the rolls or, yeah. you know, and it's, by the way, not just this election cycle. It's been for a while. Him and Karen Handel have sort of monopolized this and also revolutionized this way of voter suppression and roll purging, basically. Yeah. But also, the thing that we don't talk about enough in Georgia is they still have voting machines from 2002. So I don't even have a toaster oven.
I've had some issues.
Yeah, from 2002. Do you have any piece of electronics from 2002?
I can only think of one or two possessions I have from 2002.
These voting machines are so vulnerable to security breaches. Yeah. And we got to fix that. We really have to fix that. So when you look at someone like Stacey and how close she is and the potential that she may win this, I want also people to keep in mind what she's up against. Because really, if people turn out for her and she wins, it's because it was too big to rig.
Yeah.
And that's gives me so much hope. That gives me so much hope if that could happen in Georgia. And she's just spectacular. I've gotten to know her. We shot my show in Georgia last year. I go back in February for season two. And I'm going to, I got to be honest, if Kemp wins, I'm going to have a really hard time going to Georgia and giving them this, you know, beautiful production and putting money into their economy when it is riddled with so much heartache and suppression.
Willful voter suppression.
Yep.
If he wins, it will be hard to come up with any reason other than the near legendary voter suppression. I think the most recent purge took out 1 in 10 eligible voters in Georgia.
It's unbelievable. So then that, and then you have the voting machines from 2002.
But I'm glad that you brought that up, by the way, because Brian Kemp has a new narrative, a closing narrative, is did you know that somebody tried to hack into the voter rolls?
Yeah.
Okay, Brian Kemp, so you, first of all, you're saying it's the Democrats without any evidence. But if you're so concerned about possible security breaches, how about you replace the machines that are riddled with bugs and
errors? And why weren't you that concerned during the John Ossoff campaign, right after, because it was proven that 2 weeks before that election that there was a security breach within the rolls. So, I mean, the opportunistic nature of how they are running that state needs to change. And I'm just so elated that it could be someone as special as Stacey. Yeah. But we've got a lot of special candidates, I think.
Okay, who'd you like to turn to?
Let's talk about Ben Jealous, I think, versus Larry Hogan. You know, this is a perfect example of progression versus regression or hope. Versus fear or opportunity versus oppression. Ben Jealous is a dynamic, smart, strong leader. You know, he was the head of the NAACP for years, and he's young, and he is just really spectacular. And I know he's down in the polls, but we should not count him out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he has been doing literally everything he can to drive more turnout. He's been working relentlessly for a long time. And so we've had him on the show a couple of times. And one time was, like, there are candidates who are coasting through, like, their message is basically, like, you know, vague assertions of hope and change. But he put forward a couple of months ago a comprehensive bill to deal with lead poisoning in the state. And like, I just love that he's not forgetting these specific issues that aren't necessarily sexy that have fallen by the wayside in the midterms in most of these races. He's not doing that. And that's one of the reasons I respect him as much as I do.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
That said, as you said, it is tough. Larry Hogan, I believe, is the most popular governor in the state. So he's facing a tough challenge, but he is doing everything he can to match it.
Yeah, and I think he's running a race filled with integrity, and I'm super proud of him. I did some fundraising for him, and I'm really proud.
And thank you to Dave Chappelle for, he doesn't normally do a lot of politics stuff. He's been going to some other races now.
He's just been a constant warrior for Ben, and it's been amazing to watch. He's door knocking. Did you see that video of him door knocking, but carrying the ladies' the groceries up the stairs?
Which I want Dave Chappelle to carry my groceries. That'd be awesome.
No.
Yeah, so thanks to him for doing that as well.
For sure. Anytime a celebrity comes out like that for someone, I'm always super appreciative. Yeah.
And then, and similarly, Oprah, by the way, for Stacey Abrams.
Amazing.
Giving that speech. That was exciting.
So everyone. Powerful.
Yeah, she can deliver a speech.
Yeah, she can deliver a speech. And it was, you know, a day when I think the closing argument of the Republican Party was very much about the fear tactic. It was that same day that racist ad came out. So we really
got the anti-Oprah one. Yeah. Have you heard that?
No. Was there an anti-Oprah one too?
So there's been a series of, there was one against Andrew Gillum. Now there's one, it's impersonating Oprah using blatantly racist language.
Oh, no.
And it's just horrendous. Hopefully it's not getting any traction.
But I think it was the cop killer ad came out the same day that Oprah was in Georgia. And what a contrast, right? You have this closing argument that's all based on fear, all based on we're losing, the white man's losing our power. Mm-hmm. And then this closing argument of hope and unity. Yeah. And I thought it was pretty special. And then we have Andrew Gillum.
I'm not familiar with that person. Who are you talking about?
That's
one of the ones I'm most focused on, actually.
He's so amazing.
Not just because he is awesome, but he also stands against the, if you're ever going to have a clone of Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis is him.
Yep.
And like with most cloning at this stage in history, when you clone something, it tends to have a lot of errors. And so he's not a good clone. He doesn't deliver the message well. But he has been so relentlessly racist from day one of the general election here.
Yeah, and I love how Andrew has sort of dealt with that. He said, I don't know if you're a racist, but the racists think you're a racist.
That's a great line.
It was so brilliant. And I thought anyone who's watched any of those debates saw a smart, charismatic leader that is ready to take their state into the next phase, you know? And I think when we look at that race in Florida and we look at the Senate race in Texas and we see someone like Beto and someone like Gillum in Florida, these two super progressive candidates, we maybe, I'm hopeful that we're feeling a shift in the country. Because if those two candidates can find that kind of success in those states, what does that mean for the rest of the country?
You thank God.
Right?
Yeah, states where it might not be as difficult. Like Beto is up against it. That's still a very Republican state.
Yep.
His fundraising totals definitely gave me a lot of hope. The fact that he was able to raise $38 million, I think it was.
Taking no super PAC money, no special interest groups, all independent donations. Yeah. He's running that campaign out of the front seat of his minivan.
Yeah.
And he was on 60 Minutes last night, and they were like, "Why? Do you think that's a good idea?" And he's like, "Yeah, I do, actually.
Seems to be working.
Because it's fun."
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get back to fun.
Yeah.
But I think, again, the fact that these two progressive leaders can even come close in these states is a real, real defining moment for the country.
And I really hope, so I just mentioned that I was given some hope by his fundraising totals, especially under the self-imposed conditions that you mentioned, which we support here at TYT. I hope that for other candidates, maybe even people who aren't thinking of running yet, like this shows that it can work.
That you can do it.
It can't work in a vacuum. You have to actually have the platform and the stance and the values, which he's expressed in a number of videos and things like that. But if you have that, you do not need ExxonMobil and you don't need the pharma companies. You don't need the banks.
You don't need the NRA.
Exactly. You can raise more money than you need off of the backs of regular people who want to support your campaign if you give them something to support. And he has been doing that, thankfully.
That's exactly right.
I am going to be watching that race so closely. And if he doesn't win, it's going to be pretty devastating.
No, but you know what? We have to look at it optimistically, because not only did they come so close in very red states, but just the fact that they came so close, I think, means those states are purple. And also, now we have areas in these states that Democrats never went into before. Mm-hmm.
He went everywhere.
And Democrats just wouldn't, you know, the same thing with Stacey Abrams in Georgia. Yeah. She went into places in Georgia that a Democrat had never stepped foot in because they were defeatist. And she said, nope, I'm going to go. I'm going to sit across from people. I'm going to ask them what their problems are, and I'm going to find solutions. And I think all of these races where we're seeing these leaders really come forward have owned the ground game. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. I've been doing, you know, campaigning for candidates for 20 years. And if you can own the ground game, you will win your election.
And it's tough, but thankfully we've got a lot of people who are really doing it.
Yep.
I just want to briefly mention one other candidate. We haven't talked a lot about many of the House districts. There's one that I'm kind of personally invested in, Amar Kapanajar in California's 50th district.
Thank you for being invested in that.
He's that's a great guy.
He's a great guy, and that he could not be up against a more not great guy.
So the only thing that when we talked about that racist ad, the cop killer ad, the only thing that made me think that it might not be the most racist ad ever is because the ad that Duncan Hunter ran against Amar Kapanajar might be more racist, actually. And you're seeing a little bit of it there. The insane conspiracy theorizing and Islamophobia, it's calling it blatant racism isn't enough. There should be a stronger word against one of the most reasonable and level-headed
and smart.
Qualified guys. Smart.
So smart.
He's worked in government already.
He worked for Obama.
What are you talking about with the Muslim Brotherhood? And if the 50th district, which, so I went with him to the border back when there was that renewed push for the border wall, and we talked right at the border wall. And if that district comes out and supports him over Duncan Hunter, that will really mean something about this Islamophobic message coming from the Republican Party.
Ask me where I'm going to be at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Where are you going to be at 7 a.m.?
The polls open.
There?
I'm going to be driving people in District 50 for Amar.
Thank you. He will need it. It's tough. It's a very red district, but hopefully he can pull it out. Okay, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, a little bit of an overview on this election. Why does it matter so much? What are the stakes after this? Okay, everybody, just minutes remaining. I want to just quickly mention to you, if you don't already know, a little bit later on today after the main Young Turk show, we're going to have a 3-hour pre-election special. A number of different activist celebrities are going to be coming to the show, Skyping in. We're going to be breaking down the stakes for tomorrow's election. Tomorrow's show, by the way, is going to be a 2-hour edition of The Damage Report with Cenk Uygur co-hosting in studio. We're going to be joined from around the country by a bunch of our awesome embedded reporters. Emma Vigeland, I believe, is going to be with Richard Ojeda. Michael Shore and Ryan Grimm are going to be Skyping in as well. So we're going to give you an idea early on of what to expect throughout the day. And that will be a full day of election coverage, nonstop for 12 hours on the Young Turks or until all of the races are done. So a lot to look forward to there. We're on the eve of the election. Why does this election matter to you?
This election matters to me because so much is at stake. Mm-hmm. I mean, women's lives are at risk without Roe. Dreamers' lives are at risk without DACA. Mm-hmm. Black lives are at risk without policy that ensures that they matter. Immigrant children's lives are at risk without being with their families.
Yeah.
So we're really in a time where it's really scary. There's a lot at stake. American lives are at risk without the Affordable Care Act. The list goes on and on. I can't remember a time when so much is at stake. And I think the most important thing I could say on the eve of the election, and people have heard me say this numerous times, but in case someone hasn't heard me say it, I want to say it again. Voting is how we protect each other. Voting, if you could take yourself out of it and say, I'm going to vote to protect my neighbor, to protect my brother, to protect my sister, mm-hmm. to protect all of those that need protection that don't even know that they need protection. Take yourself out of it. Go vote for someone you love. Go vote for something you care about.
Yeah.
And protect one another. And that's what this election comes down to for me.
Yeah, and hopefully people get that at this point. I mean, I know a lot of people in media and also activists like you have been trying to make those stakes very clear. You have a lot planned for Election Day, actually, aside from just voting. You are going to be helping others to vote.
Yes, and this is a tradition that I've had pretty much for every election since 2000. I drive people to the polls. Mm-hmm. So because we have so many seats that are flippable in our state of California, and we need to flip them in order to take back the House, and I think we will flip maybe 7, which is pretty amazing out of the 23 we need. But I am starting my morning in District 50, which is in San Diego. I'm going up to 49, 48, 45, 39, and then ending up in Katie Hill's district in 25. And so I'm hitting all of those districts and I'm going to drive people to the polls.
Whew.
And I'm really excited. I'm really
excited.
It's a busy day, but to me, driving people to the polls is so hopeful. It not only keeps me not glued to the TV and not vomiting in the toilet, but it also, I get to connect with people and ask them you know, what does it mean to you to not only be able to vote, but what are the issues in your district that are getting you out to the polls today? And that's just such a special thing to be able to do. And I cherish that so much. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. Well, I would expect there's going to be a lot of excited, surprised people in those districts. And those are, as you point out, those are some of the very flippable districts that it would be amazing if they went Democratic. You know, starting from the border on up, like in 50, as we've said, you know, they've got Duncan Hunter, who's a terrible guy. His dad was a terrible guy. Like, this is a historic wrong that can be righted.
We have Rohrabacher. Nunes. I mean, it's literally, there's a lot at stake in California. Yeah. And I think when if we could look outside of whatever political ideology we may have in this state and really just realize that seven seats would almost be half of what we need to take back the House. If we could do that in our state, then we're not dependent on the rest of the states as much.
Exactly. And we totally can do it.
We can do it.
Thank you so much for coming in, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Anytime. And you know, go out there and give them hell on Election Day. To you as well, vote, damn it. Thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of the Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.